This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Good morning, Dapan, and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Elton, and the listeners.
Sure, let's start here. What are the first things that you think clients and those people who want to take out insurance policies should take note of? Very important.
If we're talking specifically about the sales conversation, the first thing that they should do is they should listen very carefully to the questions that are being asked. If they are uncertain of the questions, or if they're uncertain of the answer that is being sought, then they must ask for clarity. If they are unsure of the answer, then they must rather say to the advisor, look, I'm not sure about this. Can I come back to you at a later stage? Finally, you know, sales conversations tend to be quite tedious. And I mean, obviously, either part, both parties want to get off the phone as soon as possible, but they also want to sign. They also want to seal the deal at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that rather be patient, you know, listen to each question carefully. If you're unsure, again, like I said, get clarity, or else say to the advisor, look, I'm not sure about the answer that you're looking for. Can you please explain the question again? Alternatively, let me come back to you with an answer once I've thought about it and I'm able to give you the correct answer. Mm.
Do you find that what some of the clients do, because, for instance, you want to take out a mortgage bond, or you want to buy a new car and you're being told that you need to get insurance first, that what some of the clients do is that they go into the insurance process and acquiring the insurance policy so haphazardly that they don't actually focus and listen to all the questions and understand the T's and C's?
That's absolutely correct. And also, you know, besides the fact that, you know, that they just want to get the sales conversation done and over so that I can go and take delivery of my brand spanking new vehicle, you know, premium also becomes a big consideration, because on the one hand, you know, you're financing a vehicle. And then insurance is not exactly something that, you know, I always want to be spending money on. So it's kind of like a grudge purchase. So, you know, I'm going to obviously shop around for the cheapest premium, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is that, you know, when you're looking for a cheaper premium, your focus shouldn't be just simply on the premium. You must also focus on the cover that you're obtaining as well, and whether it does, in fact, meet your needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So 0861-987-000, any questions that you have in relation to insurance policies, some things that you might need some clarity on as well. And you can tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, use the hashtag PowerTalk, and tweet at PowerFM987. And then from the insurer's side, what is it that the insurer should make should be certain of before going into a deal of this nature? And how do I, as a client, hold the insurer accountable?
Look, from the insurer's perspective, I mean, obviously, you know, they know from their own view what type of risk they want to underwrite. So say, for instance, if it's a motor vehicle insurance policy, then they know that if it's a high-performance vehicle, for instance, they wouldn't want to cover a male that is under the age of 25. Or I'm just giving you examples purely now. Or say, for instance, a house with a thatch roof. They will not want to cover that house unless you've got adequate lightning protection all over the place. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the one aspect of it. But on the other aspect, when it comes to the sales conversation, the insurer needs to ensure that the questions that are being posed to the consumer are clear with regard to what answers are being sought in order for the insurer to correctly underwrite the risk. So say, for instance, if the insurer is concerned about your previous claims history, and the question gets asked, so the question that they ask is, have you had any claims in the last 5 years? And you answer yes. But when you submit a claim, the insurer then rejects the claim on the grounds that you've had 5 claims in the last 5 years. But that wasn't the question that was asked. If they'd asked you the question, how many claims have you had in the last 5 years? Yes, then that your answer would have amounted to a material misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. But if the question is, have you had any claims? And you answer yes, then you've answered it correctly. Mm-hmm. Then that cannot amount to a misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. The second aspect is that in terms of the Short-Term Insurance Act, it's not sufficient for you to have misrepresented your claims history. Your claims history must have been material to the insurer's acceptance of the risk, which means
what would that mean, like when you say material?
Which means that either that the insurer would not have accepted the risk had you notified them of your correct claims history, or that they would have charged a higher premium, which means that the insurer would have been prejudiced as a result of your misrepresentation.
Oh, okay. So there's a tweet here from Musi on Twitter who says, why do they do these thorough checks when I'm claiming and not when I'm applying for insurance? It just seems like ways to avoid paying out. I mean, I've been paying diligently.
The point is that an insurance contract is entered into in good faith, mm-hmm. which means that at any point in time throughout the duration of the policy, both parties must act in good faith, which means that the consumer has a duty to provide true and complete information.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is also that from a cost perspective, like I mentioned earlier, insurance being a grudge purchase, It would not be that the cost of the insurer doing underwriting at sales stage would exceed would basically result in premiums being so high that the average person mm-hmm. would not be able to afford insurance.
Mm-hmm. But is there not a level of unfairness, for instance, as Musi is saying, that I've been paying my premiums diligently and now I'm making a claim and I seemingly forfeit all of that?
I understand completely what he means, but fairness has to be looked at from both parties. I mean, ultimately, both parties are entering into a contract over here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I go back to what I'm saying earlier, is that insurance is a contract of good faith. Both parties must act in good faith at all times, and the insured has a duty at all times to provide true and complete information to the insurer.
Mm-hmm. At which point do they start with the investigations, or...
They would usually do that at claim stage. Once you've submitted a claim to the insurer will then underwrite the risk mm-hmm. and check, okay, have you provided true and complete information? But remember, misrepresentation is not just simply limited to information that's provided at sales stage. It could also relate to information that's provided at claim stage, mm-hmm. and which goes back to the duty of good faith, that I need to provide true and complete information at all times.
The reason that I asked this question is because the insurance system tells us that they have our information. So why is it that, for instance, when I speak about an accident claim, they ask me a question about an accident claim, they can see whether there was any accident claim from another insurance because they share information?
They do share the information. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. So why can't they call me out at that point to say that actually we see that when you were with Old Mutual Insurance, you made this particular claim. Are you sure that this wasn't you?
I know it almost seems like they're setting you up for failure.
Yeah.
But the point is still that both parties need to act in good faith. And that is why it's more important, because the consequences for the insured if they do not provide the true and complete information are more detrimental to the insured if that information is not provided upfront.
Okay, 0619870000. Success, good morning.
I don't know you.
Good.
Good, man. Look, I want to also extend my greetings to your guest over there. Mm. Look, Alden, I've got an issue with these insurances. I happen to have a friend who, she had two cars, actually, and on both two cars, there's something called who is the regular driver. You know, the insurance went to the guy's workplace. They went and asked the security guard, do you know Aldrin Sambia? Yes, who drives the white Polo? And then they said yes. And they, on those basis, they concluded to say Aldrin was driving the car, and this lady never disclosed that Aldrin is a regular driver and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They ended up declining that lady. So the point that I want to make is an insurance is a contract in my understanding. But if you look from the side of the insurance, there are so many things that they don't tell us. And if you don't have the ability to understand that, when you go to the ombudsman does not help at all. Mm-hmm. I have that experience myself. they will talk like what your guest is saying now. They will just be saying to you, no, but there was this and this and this and this. But they don't actually help at all. Thank you, Aldrin.
Okay, thank you so much. Stuart, good morning.
Sure, how are you doing?
Good, man.
Good, thanks. I have a question and a comment. So the first question, in terms, you know, when you obviously take an insurance for koloi, for a car, they will ask you, like business usage specifically. So I just wanted to find out, how do they determine that that particular car will fall under that category of business? If, for example, you, that same car, the Polo you're driving, you usually once in a week help your mother to go fetch stock or go kai, you understand? Then during that particular day, you get into an accident whereby you are fetching your mother's maybe Inuka products or snacks and stuff like that. Then the last comment, it's this. I just want to do a follow-up on the previous caller. I feel like insurances, they just use platitudes, you know, lip service to usually say there's ombudsman and all these things. Because we have seen so many times on the media, including the famous one that happened with the Indian gentleman from Durban, I think, they do not need what they are supposed to do when it hits the fan. And the client is left in the dark, financial strain, because these corporate companies are not honoring their promises. Yabo.
Okay. Is it Priscilla?
Yes, it is.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Just hold a sec for a minute.
Oh no. Apologies. Priscilla, we'll be speaking to the minister at around just after 25 minutes after 11 o'clock. Dapana, can you just quickly respond then to these questions, the question by and the comment by Success and the question by Stuart as well?
Okay, the first question raised by Success with regard to the issue of the regular driver goes back once again to incomplete information at sales stage. So our inquiry will basically be, what was the information that was volunteered by the insurer during the sales conversation? Secondly, then the issue with regard to claim stage, who was the regular driver? The reason why insurers would underwrite on a regular driver goes back to my first point with regard to the risk profile of the specific driver of the vehicle. And that's the basis on which the insurer chose to underwrite the risk. In terms of the way the ombudsman would deal with such a complaint is that we would look at the evidence that the insurer has provided with regard to, obviously, if there are two vehicles in the household and there's a husband and a wife and a kid, it's unlikely that the husband, unless the wife is not in possession of a driver's license, it's unlikely that husband would be driving both vehicles at the same time. If, say, for instance, if you're looking at a household of a which consists of three vehicles, a Mercedes-Benz, an Audi sedan, and a Polo Golf, and its parents and a 18-year-old son who's going to university, it's unlikely that the dad would be the driver, the regular driver of the Polo, because the son is obviously at university. How does he travel to university every day? These are just some of the aspects that we would look at in terms of an investigation. But the important thing to remember is that your insurance contract is a contract based in the civil law, which means that the insurer only needs to demonstrate on a balance of probabilities that there was a misrepresentation either with regard to the regular driver or the usage of the vehicle. I hope I've answered your question with regard to that. And then with regard to the business use of the vehicle, Stuart made reference to the fact that he uses a vehicle once a week for business use. But the point is that business usage of a vehicle is very much dependent on each different insurer's definition of business use. So that goes back to my first point. You need to listen carefully to what the insurer has said to you.
Is there a standard definition of what business usage would be? If, for instance, if a complaint comes before the ombudsman, how you would determine?
No, unfortunately, there isn't. Because remember, I mean, there are so many different, I mean, we have about 40 different insurer members of our office, and that doesn't even make up the total number of short-term insurers in South Africa that cover vehicles, basically. And each individual person, like you have an individual contract with your insurer, I have an individual contract with my insurer, and no two insurance contracts are exactly the same. Okay. So the extent of the cover provided is not exactly the same. And also now in South Africa, different insurers have now expanded into professional use, and there's different, so there's even different categories of business use depending on your specific contract and your specific needs. Goes back to having to listen carefully to what the insurer is saying during the sales conversation. But more importantly, when you receive your policy wording, read it. Understand it. Make an effort to understand. If you do not understand, call the insurer and say to them, listen, what are you trying to say over here? Is this applicable to me? Give me examples. How does this apply to me?
Okay. Here's a quick question from Xolisile on Twitter, who says, a car hit the biker and the bike fell to my car, leaving it with a dent. The car guy admitted his mistake and gave me his insurance company details. I didn't open the case. Both the car insurance and bike owners are refusing to fix my car. Please advise.
With regard to that, we're talking about a liability claim. Yeah. So obviously the insured would now either need to go to the small claims court or go to an attorney and then proceed with the issue and some service of summons against the third party.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dapana Hawkinson, Senior Assistant Ombudsman.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.